Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
It was not working for me.
Well, all right. I'm glad that it has been repaired, as they say.
Well, yeah, it's all working now, and we're recording. Sorry, in the background, I got like three of my printers running at the same time, and it's making a lot of noise that I was not expecting it to make.
I can't hear it at all. So
okay,
that's
good.
That's good. And two, are you finally making the triple dildo?
I am finally making a triple dildo for the three holes that it would need to penetrate.
Yes.
Actually, it's just a double dildo, but it's actually on the ends of a Darth Maul lightsaber, so I can like whip it out in the bedroom and be like, da 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 dildo dildo dildo
dildo. Yes, perfect.
The Darth Maul dildo song. It was now will be a game classy tradition. I have said it.
All right, I like it. I approve. I stand.
You stand for the Darth Maul dildo.
Yeah. No, not stand with the D. Stan.
Oh,
I stand.
I stand
the Darth Maul dildo.
To go back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
In the previous episode. So are you excited about today being the 4th of July in celebration of our nation's independence?
Should I be?
Of course. It's always fun to celebrate the 4th of July. When else can you get sunstroke while blowing off half your hand?
And then also get COVID.
And get COVID. Well, I mean, you don't, yeah. I mean, whatever. We're all getting COVID at this point, so don't think that you're getting out of it because you're staying at home. It'll hit you. Just like Captain Trips eventually got everybody in the stand, it's going to get you. You can try and hermetically seal yourself or wear your mask. You're going to get it.
It's going to bust its way into my apartment door.
Yeah, it's going to be like, oh, yeah.
Oh, it's going to have Slim Jims, too?
Yes, it's COVID's coming in. Or else it's more like the, it could be like the Kool-Aid Man. It's, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Because both the Macho Man and the Kool-Aid Man would bust through walls. And I'm not saying that they're the same person, but have you ever seen Macho Man and the Kool-Aid Man together in the same room?
I haven't, but you know, that might be a thing. I have to look.
Exactly. This conspiracy goes deep, Steve.
This runs deep.
And yeah.
There's a Kool-Aid Man versus Macho Man death battle.
Ooh.
There's also a very interesting mashup that looks like the Kool-Aid Man, but it's Macho Man Randy Savage's face.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that.
It does appear that they might. No, no, I'm gonna have to say it appears that so in the lore. It looks like Macho Man and Kool-Aid Man are, in fact, independent entities. However, if I were to surmise going by my Google search here on images, they did, in fact, have an epic bro moment conflict, which resulted in them being fused into a single entity for at least some period of time, presumably only able to be separated by the love of Miss Elizabeth.
I think we've only scratched the surface here, Steve. We've only scratched the surface.
I think you might be right.
And speaking of conspiracy theories, I got to watch one of my favorite 4th of July movies this week, which is National Treasure.
Independence Day with Will Smith?
No, National Treasure was the one I watched. Independence Day is not streaming currently, so I have not gotten a chance to watch that.
I see, but you could have that really great speech that Trump photoshopped his face over.
Yeah, pretty much. Today's our Independence Day. As he drinks his glass with two hands. That's the weirdest thing ever.
Oh no, he used it was national news. He used one hand last
time. I know, but I mean, I've seen him drink water multiple times, and the man cannot drink water. What's going on with that?
He practiced. I have to imagine he was like the entire time he was on his flight to Oklahoma, he was doing nothing but like practicing with one arm.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, how do you go your entire? I mean, the man's like what, 70 years old? How do you go 70 years and not learn how to drink a glass of water?
I mean, I couldn't even begin to fathom.
Exactly. It makes no sense, sir. It makes no sense. There's a deeper conspiracy. I think it involves the Liberty Bell. And Ben Franklin's glasses.
It makes as much sense as thinking you're going to bust open the steak industry worldwide by selling your steaks at the Sharper Image. So
it's true.
I think that's where I'm going to end with that. But no, I will not be doing anything for the 4th of July. It is a stupid holiday.
It's not a stupid holiday. It's about the birth of our nation.
Yeah, our nation's a fucking piece of shit. What do you want?
Now, at the current moment, however, there's always a possibility that we can improve as a nation.
Great.
I'm just saying, let's be hopeful. Let's be optimistic. Let's be like Benjamin Gates in National Treasure and be optimistic and love our country.
Hey, you take a shit in one hand and put your optimism in the other. Which one weighs more?
I don't know. I've been eating a lot of fluff or nutter. So my shits are probably light and fluffy. I'm just saying.
So you're saying that your poops are the exact weight of optimism?
It could very well be at this point.
You've been just juicing yourself on helium.
Actually, 4th of July, I believe, has
one of the... I was just spending some time being patriotic and reading the Wikipedia articles of the United States war crimes. That's what I like. That's how I like to spend my 4th of July.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that there's no nation that has been that's absolutely free of war crimes. Even the neutral Swiss, it's like, but like, get all that gold in your bank.
here's the deal. That is true, an undeniable statement of fact, and only a fool would argue it. Minus like some tiny little nation that's never done anything regarding like any other country, and even then, you could probably find some sort of war crime that they did to their own people, maybe at some point. So. Yeah. That is a foolish argument. However, much like anything else that is horrible socially or governationally or whatever the fuck you want to say, America is doing its best to be number fucking one.
And you know what? We never end up actually as number one. We always end up as like number 12 or number like 38 out of like 240 countries.
Can't even win.
Well, you know what we are number one with? Incarcerations.
That's true. And also per capita COVID cases.
Yes. And per capita COVID cases. We're number one. And so I told you, it's like, oh, Steve, you're so naive thinking that you're not going to get it cooped up in your apartment. You'll eventually get it. It'll seep through that cheap window ceiling like, that they've used.
Yes. Once it anthropomorphizes and busts into the apartment and just is like, what's up, bitch? Like, yeah, at that point, you are correct. I will not be able to withstand its might after it's evolved and changed into whatever thing it's going to become to.
You're going to be like, this salad that I bought is delicious. Oh, God, it's contaminated with the COVID. Ah! See, it's like it's going to get you eventually. No, the 4th of July actually has the best movie marathon capabilities out of any holiday, maybe except Halloween, but Halloween, it's you have to be very, very, you have to negotiate what exactly is a Halloween movie as opposed to what is a horror movie.
Oh, yeah. Are you just watching scary movies or are you watching Halloween-themed horror movies?
Exactly. So for 4th of July, I watched The Patriot. I watched National Treasure. I watched Jaws.
The beach will be open by the 4th.
Exactly. It's one of the most prescient movies of now more than ever. I watched the Hamilton musical, and I watched 1776.
That's right. You were sending me some dope Data singing songs from 1776 footage.
Yes, I know. Our listeners absolutely love it when I go into our deep musical history lore. Brent Spiner was played John Adams in the 1997 Broadway revival of 1776, which is supposedly was very good, and it actually had Pat Hingle playing Ben Franklin. Do you know who Pat Hingle is?
No idea.
He is, I believe, he was Commissioner Gordon in the 1989 Batman movie.
Okay, I reckon he's one of those guys. I just did the old Google. He is someone I certainly recognize, but I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he's just an old character actor, but he was I only know him from the 1989 Batman. So
I want to say I know him from the Muppets.
I don't know.
Kind of looks like a Muppet.
He a little bit does, but yeah, that's And actually, the video that I sent you is like the only known footage of Brent Spiner playing John Adams from that. That show ran for 340 performances, which is not fantastic, but it's a pretty decent run. He was in the Muppets.
Hey, all right.
Yes, I just pulled that up right now. But yeah, that footage that I sent you is the only known footage of Brent Spiner playing John Adams. So enjoy it before it disappears off the internet completely.
Yes. I don't think they passed that new. Well, there's all the DMCAs, I guess. So who fucking knows? It's like we didn't get you with the law, but we'll just get you with the law that already exists, applying it in a way that's never been, you know, tested because nobody can stop it.
Well, I mean, like, look at the site I sent you. It's some weird like Indian YouTube site or whatever. I don't know what it is. And
it was definitely a thing
because the YouTube site pulled it off, and it was pulled off of YouTube.
Yeah,
because YouTube is a trash fire of a website.
That is 100% true. I would never argue that. That's you start looking at Elsa videos, and then suddenly you're learning about the coming of the Fourth Reich that you should join.
Yeah. Who knew? All right. So
Google AdSense. That's who knew.
Yeah. So welcome to Game Classy. I'm your host Joe, and with me as always is my fellow patriot Steve.
Well, I guess I did see someone say that true patriotism is wanting your country to not be shit. So I guess technically, yes, I am a patriot.
You are a patriot, sir.
That's the thing I heard. It's
you're one step closer to getting a "Don't Tread on Me" bumper sticker.
No, I actually, what I do want is I want the one that says "Do Tread on Me" and the snake has a ball gag and is tied up. That's what I want. I want the BDSM Gadsden flag.
I want the foot coming down, and I want the speech bubble to coming out of the snake that says, "Ooh, what is this?"
Oh, yes, yes. Ooh, woo, what's this?
Yes.
Yes, I like that one too. That's another really good one. that always cracks me up when I see a self-professed libertarian being like, "Back to blue," and I'm like, "What?" Like, you don't even understand the political ideology you say you adhere to.
Exactly. And then on top of that, the great thing is that we have here in America during this July 4th holiday, so many wonderful token gestures instead of actual real change. So, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know what? Someone actually just pointed out something amazing that I didn't notice. Back to the 40K little blue dune buggy.
Yeah.
It is a Mario Kart double dash car.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I totally forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, I could have told you that. It's the stupid Mario Kart car. Actually, there's a guy who created a 3D printing file it's like a copy of that dune buggy,
mm-hmm.
but it's the body is done up as the Batmobile tumbler from the Christopher Nolan movies.
Oh, okay.
So it's it's the tumbler, but with a big machine, double barrel machine gun on the back.
Yeah, I wonder, and I also wonder if that model would look less silly if the driver in the front was covered.
Well, of course it would. That would look less silly just giving it the slightest bit of thought.
That's true.
Like if the problem is, and I think we've gone over this on the podcast before, that in any sort of design aspect for Games Workshop, they don't design models based on rules. Their studio comes up with something and they say, "Oh, this is cool. We'll put this in the game." So that's why it's like, well, how come they haven't done another Primark for, 40K yet? And it's like, the reason they haven't is because no one decided to design a Primark yet.
I think you're right. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's like basically what it comes down to is that the modelers are like, "I want to do this." And then they do that. They might give them something like some little whatever, like, "Hey, you know what we want? We want something that's going to replace the attack bike." And then the model designers are like, "I have an idea." And they boots up Mario Kart and he starts viciously scratching out of Mario Kart. And that's how it works. And that's why it's like, how come they're not releasing anything for the Eldar? No one's designed anything for the Eldar. That's part of the reason. If there was at least one person who was like, "You know what? I really want to design some new Aspect Warriors. I want to design some new Dark Reapers. I'm going to do that." And then all of a sudden, GW's releasing Dark Reapers. So, I mean, that's what we end up with. It's bullshit, but
well, that makes sense.
But we don't play 40K. It's a baby, stupid baby's game.
Well, maybe not yet. I mean, there's a new edition, so there's always a chance for it to not be a baby's game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would hardly think that 7th or 8th edition were baby's games. Those games involved, like...
No, those were ludicrous. The joke of it being a baby's game was when they did the quote unquote dumbed down edition where they standardized everything. That was I think that was 5th. It was either, I don't think it was 4th. I think it was 5th. It was where like every unit was like the same, like across the board. Like you looked at the Chaos Codex and it was just like the only difference in these rules are their models.
Yeah, I mean it's still a stupid baby's game because most people who play it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a miniatures game. It's toys. It's gonna attract people like us. You know, man, children,
children, 40-year-olds who have nothing better to do
than play with and argue about toys.
Yeah, they actually. Did you see the big 40K reveal this weekend? The 40K reveal.
The only things I saw the Silent King, which looks fucking incredible.
Yep.
And I saw the Satan that's like got all of the like pieces and the electricity floating around him. Also looks completely incredible. Like those models are.
You are such a sucker for Necrons.
Those models are gorgeous. I love those models. They're so good.
I don't know anybody who loves the Necrons as much as you.
How do they just look fucking cool? I don't tell you, man.
I don't. I mean, I respectfully disagree. There's parts of them that do look cool. Like, some of the things that I just... Like, I think that the faces of the Necrons all look really, really silly. Because their skulls... Their skulls is drawn by a 9-year-old who learned how to draw skulls from reading Spawn.
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, I mean, there's style. I mean, I know what... They're supposed to be, like, death masks or whatever. So it's like, it's kind of like, I get it.
And the Silent King, the whole thing with the Silent King, that's a pretty cool looking model. Like I'll admit, I love the
floating shields. He's got little goon henchmen. He's got a big ass robe, and he's got an imprisoned Satan. He's just very cool.
The katana that's imprisoned at the top is really dynamic. I dig it. I mean, the whole model looks really cool, and I except for the face. I think the face looks. It's like
You know, I actually saw someone do I saw someone do their when they did their crons. You know, have you seen those like porcelain ones? The ones that like they try and do like the porcelain effect for their armor.
Or is it porcelain or marble? I've seen marbled effects.
Same difference. It's like it's like that kind of like somewhat shininess.
Yeah.
So what this person did is they did their Necrons as like the classic like metallics and so on and so forth. But what they did is all of their faces. They did the porcelain effect on to make it look like a death mask kind of thing. And that looked very, very good.
A death mask, huh?
Yeah, that looked very good. It applied a very specific look to the face that made it seem like the look was more like this is stylized because it's covering up something. Like because they did it exactly where that seam is on the top of their head. So it looked like something that was placed on top of whatever the like internal components of the Necron's face is.
Give me one second.
I'll be right back.
I'm back, by the way.
All right, very good. I walked away to go get my coffee. So you'll have a nice dead zone of sound that you can cut out with whatever the thing is.
Exactly. Sorry, I locked my family outside the house. That's just
smart.
As my wife tells me, I have this horrendous habit of locking the door whenever I walk inside. Like, I'm like, that's not a terrible habit. That's actually a pretty good habit to constantly lock your door, yes. You know, for safety's sake or anything like that. And I'm like, I'll be damned if I care that you guys are outside. You should have your own damn keys to get in the house. Don't tell me. But yeah, the Silent King looks great. If I was going to do Necrons, in all honesty, what I would probably do is I would green stuff the faces. I would just cover over the face completely so that it's just like a full mask. Like with no eyes, no mouth, nothing. It's just like a blank slate.
Oh, you could that would be pretty cool. I think that's like what is it? Like the robots in Scud that aren't Scud look like that, right?
Well, I'm sure everybody will get that reference from 1993.
Hey, if you don't get my Scud reference, I don't care.
from like the trade paper, that 12-issue miniseries that was released in like, you know, the very early 90s.
Funny thing about that, I only know about Scud because it was a video game.
Really?
Yeah, I was introduced to Scud as a video game because I thought it was a completely self-contained property, like as a video game. And then years later, someone was like, oh, that was based on a comic book. And I'm like, really? Oh, yeah. All right.
And the guy who wrote the comic book was?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Nope.
It's the Justin Roiland. And that, oh,
wait, what?
Yeah, from Rick and Morty.
No way.
Yes.
I have to look this up. There's no way that Justin Roiland wrote that comic. No way.
And I know Dan Harmon worked on it,
like,
too.
He was like a child when that came out. No way. It says it was written by Rob Schraub.
Rob Schraub. I'm sorry. It's Rob Schraub. Yeah, Schraub is. Sorry. I'm thinking of Dan Harmon because Rob Schraub used to be on Harmontown with him. Yeah.
Ah, yes. Okay, yes. Dan Harmon. Yes, Dan Harmon for sure. Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub or whatever. They were, it seems that they're partners. They wrote Monster House, which I...
Yes,
I
they did write Monster House.
I actually like that movie. the vague memory, but I remember liking it because, you know, it was fucking 14 years ago.
And also with the Necron... And the other thing with the Necron release was the Shard of the Void Dragon or whatever it's called. That's the electric guy. I like the head on that figure quite a bit.
I don't think I saw that one. Oh wait, no, you're talking about the buff dude.
Yeah, the buff dude that's the
fuckable robot.
That stupid fucking pose. I hate that pose.
The
so
angel
much.
Pose? The biblical angel pose?
Yeah, well, I mean, for miniatures, it's a lazy fucking pose.
I guess technically it's also not it's not technically the biblical angel pose either. It's the westernized version of the biblical angel.
Yeah. With the wings up and like, oh, I have my both arms out with like, and I got my spear. It's all, oh, it looks so impressive. And oh, look, I'm being suspended by fucking plastic, you know, in this complicated way. It's the same thing as Galmiraz from the Age of Sigmar. It's the same exact fucking model, in pose at least. And it's just, it's lazy. It's not dynamic. It's just supposed to be cool looking, which is, but it's fine. It's boring. It's just,
I mean, it looks cool. I think there's a big issue with, like, so speaking of posing and coolness and so on and so forth, again, this I believe we'll come back to the thing that we briefly discussed last cast, which is, you know, there's the miniatures are game pieces. And as a model, it's way cool to have something like, say, oh, I don't know, I'll use a model I own, the Glotkin as a cool example. The Glotkin is a very cool looking model. It's like big, it's got a big beast. And it has two little guys on top of it. It's dynamic. There's a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. Glotkin's a fantastic model.
The problem with the Glotkin, though, is in terms of game piece, is like those little guys have pieces that are sticking out and create a really bizarre, not footprint, but like cube print of the model. So like while you're reaching over the table and so on and so forth, there's little dainty parts that are sticking out that are just rife to be broken.
They are rife.
Rife to be broken. And I think that that's an issue with a lot of the really like super dynamic models where like, you know, they're doing like a crate or like the Harlequins where they're on like their tippy toe and then like it's just a model that falls over constantly or is just like totally ready to break. So I think there's something to be said for a little bit more static than crazy posing.
Okay, I agree. However, if you look at the static fucking model on it, well, it's being suspended on electrical currents, which, fine, maybe it's sturdier than it looks, okay? But then it has the stupid fucking wings at the top, which are going to break off, or the spear on the sides, which are going to break off, no matter how you try and transport that thing.
Oh, yeah, you got to use, that's the other thing, too. Like, since Age of Sigmar, really, where they've changed the way they've designed models fitting into a normal shaped transport, I've been all in on the, like, the only way you can reasonably transport models at this point is magnets under the base. It's like, you just can't do it otherwise, because there's too many models that are just like in extraordinarily bizarre poses that just don't fit in any size of foam. It just doesn't work. It's just gonna break. And you've got like guys that are, you know, their spears, like, you know, he's like lunging forward with his spear way out. And it's like, cool, that's going to fucking shatter if I put it in this foam and move it around. The only way to, the only way to transport that is to put a magnet on their base, and put it in the base, period. That, like, flat out, that like, you have to do it. And there's like, the other thing too, is like, there's models like the Puskoil Blight Lords, the Blight Kings on the bugs. They look fine. Like they're on like the quote unquote conveniently placed rock or being held aloft by their, the miniature is being held aloft by the bell that it's dragging. The issue is that they're so top heavy. They're just a, they're, they just fall. So again, as a game piece, you've designed something that all it does is fall over. And also its footprint is impossible to put in any foam because it is a tiny, like spindly thing elevating the model. Then there's like the big chonking like square of the Blight King on the bug. And then there's also the huge wings that are sticking out horizontally from either side. Again, the only way to reasonably transport that model is magnets on the base. And you have to put a weight on the base. I used washers just so the thing doesn't constantly fall over.
As it has been said multiple times in the great movie War Games, the only way to truly win, Steve, is not to play.
That's true. Your models will never break if you only paint them and put them in a shelf.
That's what I tend to do because I don't play these games. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. But people are, I got to say, people are mad hype for the new 40K. Like, it seems like more so than normal from what I've
hype,
seen.
Hype.
Yes. Yeah. It really seems like more so than normal. People are just like totally, totally like juiced for the
new. I bet you I know what they're excited about, the brand new Chaplain on Bike.
Hey, the Chaplain on Bike was one of the most sought after miniatures. Do you remember the wieners asking for that thing at the bunker? They kind of be like, yeah, the Chaplain on Bike. Like, no, it's out of print.
Oh my god. And the new version looks exactly the same as the old version. It's just bigger and more expensive. So
yeah, it's bigger.
Yeah. It's got a new hat.
Well, the pose is a little bit better. He's also got a foot on the ground, so his bike is in a little bit better of a pose. Like, he's actually, it's better, but yes, I mean, it's still just a chaplain on a bike. As we've said before, there's no way to do anything. Like, bikes are a dude on a bike. There's nothing, can't do anything about that.
Yeah, what you do is you don't have it as a bike. You have it as a cool, like, hover bike, and that would be fucking badass.
That is true. I do completely agree that having the Primaris bikes not be hover bikes is a huge miss.
Yeah, and they also did a preview for a brand new Tech Marine.
A Primaris Tech Marine?
A Primaris? Are you kidding me? They're not making regular. I've told you that entire, all of the Space Marine stuff is getting discontinued. It's all going to Primaris.
It's going to Primaris for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Primaris Tech Marine, he looks like the Marine. Like,
yeah.
I don't get super hype about the Space Marine minis, but I also don't get super down on them. I think they're fine. Like, they're just, they're not, it's like, it's kind of like, eh, it's like, okay. When's Primaris Chaos?
Oh, they're. I don't think they're actually going to do like a Primaris Chaos. I just think that all Chaos releases are just going to make the Chaos Marines just bigger. That's what it's going to come down to.
Oh, like Chaos Warrior style.
Yeah, they're just going to get beefy and big, and it's going to be just whenever there's a resculpt of them, that's what it's going to end up as.
Just getting chonkier. All right, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, it fits with the lore of, you know, like when you worship chaos, you just get bigger.
You get swole.
You become part of the Swoletariat.
Yeah, it's true. The Swoletariat.
Yeah. So it's like, I love this. There was like this big release, this big like hoopla about like, here's the fucking shit. And it's just like, oh, it's four models. Okay, cool. I mean, granted, the Silent King, Cesaric, that's a pretty big model. I think that they could have just done like the release on as that, and everybody I would have been kind of happy. But all this other stuff, it's like, maybe the Catan. I don't know. You're just a Necron apologist, so.
No, I like their models. What can I say? I think they look good. But you know what? No, I'm not. I don't fully believe in the weird Martian tripod walker. I think that my issues with that model are twofold. Like, one, I do think it's a kind of cool looking model. It looks like a cool like Martian tripod walker. Two, I have no idea why it's in the Necron army. It looks absolutely, completely stylistically, completely alien to any other Necron model. It looks so weird.
Going back to what we talked about, Steve, why is it in the army? It's because someone in the studio is like, look at what I made. And but Jervis Johnson's like, oh, that's beautiful. Let's put it in 4K.
Back to the, but here's the thing that makes that, even that belief system extremely obnoxious and, dare I say, problematic, is that if one were to look at that model and then apply rules to it, it's clearly, it's 100% that is an Adeptus Mechanicus model.
Yeah.
That's a Mechanicus model. Like, there's no reason that should be Necrons. That's a Mechanicus model. Like, the Mechanicus have the whole, like, Martian retro future design on everything they have anyway. They have, like, the Beep Blorp 1950s robots and everything. So, why you wouldn't put... Yeah, the Beep Blorp 1950s robots. So, why you wouldn't put clearly, like, War of the Worlds inspired miniature with your retro future War of the Worlds inspired army? I don't know.
Because they're doing a full Necron release. So they were like, we could put it with the Adeptus Mechanicus, but they already got a bunch of shit. So we'll just stick it with the Necrons because that's, you know, what we have. That's what we got coming out. That's the way it works, Steve. You know that.
Well, in more important news than anything else, Joey Chestnut defeated everyone at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest by a ludicrous margin.
Did he really?
He did. He had a 33 hot dog and bun margin of victory. He could have sat out the last 5 minutes and 35 seconds of the competition and still won. He consumed roughly 22,000 calories in 10 minutes.
Well, I like to say, there's nothing more American than competitive food eating.
Miki Sudo from Japan set the female record.
Yeah, the Japanese love competitive eating.
They do. It's like the two countries that are into competitive eating are the Japanese and Americans. For
but
sure.
I think I want to say that it's mainly an American thing. But you know how Japanese love to like latch on to American things and like make it purely Japanese. Like that is a prime example.
They've always had that ramen contest. That's been a big thing.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I don't know about that too much, but I'm sure it involves eating a lot of ramen very fast.
There's people around you. You have a small bowl. You put your bowl out. Someone drops the ramen in there, the noodles, and you shotgun it, and then you put your bowl back down, and someone drops ramen in there again, and you just keep going.
That sounds a little rough. I'm not gonna lie.
I could not believe how much ramen people were eating. It was absolutely insane.
No, I love ramen.
For the record, she ate 48 and a half hot dogs. Wow. In 10 minutes.
Now, is this like traditional Japanese ramen, or is this like fast food ramen? Like, which is still Japanese, but I mean, what type of ramen is it?
I think it's buckwheat noodles.
Well, but I mean, is it like the package, or is it like homemade?
Oh no, it's homemade.
Okay, that's the, because I think if it was like, I like the package stuff, but it's too salty. Like I can barely eat a bowl of it as is because of all the salt.
Yeah, no, this is the homemade stuff. The packaged ramen is, whenever you get like, you should never be eating packaged ramen in a restaurant. Like that's, the packaged ramen is specifically for.
But yeah, I thought it was. I don't know about the contest. I don't know if it's in a restaurant or if it's in the front of Nathan's Hot Dogs or whatever.
No, I just mean in general. Like unless you are specifically opening a pack of ramen, you're generally going to be eating a homemade noodle.
Yeah,
because the ramen noodles you buy are already kind of pre cooked because they do like that flash fry or whatever. These ramen will be dough to cooking rather than dough to flash fry to boiling.
And for those of our listeners who are outside the U.S., we are talking about Nathan's Hot Dog Contest, which I'm sure might be a somewhat of internationally known at this point. I don't know.
It's big enough to trend. Well, so my benchmark is if it's big enough to trend on Twitter, international people probably know about it. And it's big enough to trend on Twitter, so international people probably know about it.
Okay, well, there you go. It is literally how many hot dogs can you eat in 10 minutes?
Yes.
And we're not talking about any like, you know, bratwurst or
hot dog plus bun.
hot dog plus bun. This is a standard American. I believe Nathan's is all beef frank.
Nathan's is an all beef frank.
Yes, and it's with a bun. I don't know if the buns have sesame seeds or not.
They are not. They're classic no-topping buns.
Classic no-topping buns. And it was a standard contest until the Japanese, I believe it was in the early 90s, what was his name, Fukujima or something like that?
I believe it was Kobayashi, actually.
Kobayashi, that's what it is, Kobayashi. Kobayashi developed the technique of taking the glass of water and soaking the hot dog bun in the water.
Takeru Kobayashi.
And so that he could just literally slide it down his gullet like a duck.
Yep, into the water, the water technique.
It was a water technique.
They're like, yeah, it's legal.
Which I disagree with. I don't think the water technique should be done. I think that they should roll that back I don't think it's fair. I think it destroys what a hot dog is.
You're allowed beverages in all eating contests, so I have to disagree.
I don't agree with, I don't disagree with having a glass of water, but what I do disagree with is using the soaking method. Because you're destroying the purity of the hot dog.
Well, here's the thing. You and I can't actually make a call in this regard simply because we are not the arbitrators of the rules of the sacred Nathan's Eating Hot Dog Contest. They are the ones who have declared that it is okay to dip your glizzy in water before you cram it down your gullet.
You know, I feel that this is part of where our nation went awry. That was the event that set us down this path.
Dipping glizzy.
Yeah. Dipping the hot dog into the water. Some people will point to, the death of, what was that monkey's name?
Harambe.
Harambe, the death of Harambe in 2016. No. It goes back even further than that. This is the domino effect all the way. So, did you see the new victory conditions for a ninth edition?
No.
You haven't seen this?
No.
So I don't know how far it goes. However, a rule specifically inside the ninth edition battle scenarios states that you get 10 victory points, because I guess the victory points system is a little different. So like you get like, there's like a maximum of 45 per category. So I'm sure you're scoring a lot of victory points, but you get an automatic 10 if your army is painted to table standard.
Nice.
Yes. So no matter what, whenever you are playing a game, you could get that automatic 10 points against Dan Delanois for playing these unpainted armies.
The return of Delanois.
So someone could say like you'd be playing your game and you're like, I would love to see every time you played a game to start off you going, well, that's 10 points for me for having a fully painted army. And then seeing someone saying like, oh, we're not going to play by those rules. No, sir. These rules are in the rule book for a reason.
you just open up the rule book and flip to the page and point at it and just go.
No. You open up the book very slowly and you lick your finger and then you turn the page to that page. And then you say that you point to it and you believe, am I reading this correctly here? That I get 10 points if my models are are painted to table standard. And then the other person will be like, it says that, but we don't play by those rules. And I go, excuse me, sir, but you can't just pick and choose what rules you want to play with. These are specific victory standards, sir. I get my 10 points. So
just again, tap.
tap. I mean, I don't think it really matters at tournaments because tournaments do you are required to have your stuff painted at tournaments anyway.
And, generally, yeah. Yeah. Well, not always. There's a few tournaments that don't have that, which I thought was kind of weird, especially for a workshop. But
are they like major tournaments or just like small game store tournaments?
I guess nothing that would be considered a major. Majors always ask that you have at least like
three colors.
Yeah, three colors in base, like, you know, at least something. And like, yeah. Like at this point, like with all of the available tools to like, even the laziest or worst hobbyist or the laziest worst hobbyist has no excuse at this point to not at least do three colors in base.
Like, I would love.
There's way too much available now where like you could just be like, yes, spray it bone and then just do two different contrast washes. You're done. Like,
yeah, I would actually, like it if you would call out and not give a person 10 points because you said their models are not table standard. Just like,
I'm very, very lenient on table standard. I think for me, it's basically like, is it painted? Like, it's very, for me, it's a very binary yes, no. It's like, is it painted? Is it based? And I feel that, and for me, I'm even light on basing too, because basing for me is it's a different color than the model. So
I would love to see that. Like, you go, your models are not table standard. And just to see like the person, like how would they defend them? Like, how would you defend yourself in that situation? Like if someone said, your models are not table standard, like the amount of rage that would bubble up from any person you said that to would just be, it would be glorious. Glorious. I that's the only way I could describe it. Because like if you're in an actual legitimate tournament and then you can't claim those 10 points, I would if someone said that to me, like, and you know, aside from the fact that I take a lot of pride in my painting, if someone said that to me, I would probably just smash every one of their models, like with the rule book as a hammer. And I would get like the 8th edition Warhammer Fantasy rulebook to smash their models with. I'd be like, excuse me, sir. And I would like reach underneath the table and pull out that giant Bible of a book and just start smashing them. No, you know what book I would use? I would use my collector's edition, 7th edition collector's book for fantasy, which is that big giant hardbound one.
Oh, that's yes.
What I would use.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
But yeah, that was added to the rules as a victory condition for victory for 9th edition points. So I think that would be relatively humorous on any front.
Yes, I agree. It would just be sad.
It would be sad. And looks like we're getting General's Handbook next week.
Yeah, it's so fast. I couldn't believe it.
But, yeah, that was out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I mean, I'm always excited about the General's Handbook. It usually does a good job. The last one almost created a catastrophe, but they course corrected pretty fast, so that was good.
That was with the terrain, right?
Yeah, it was the terrain and like a couple other things. Like it was basically like it only would have been a catastrophe if it was one of those things where it's like player, like you have to adhere to these rules. Like no one, it would only have been a catastrophe if all of the TOs like were like, we're just gonna go by the book because we don't actually care. Like that's the only way it would have been that. But the TOs were like, we're not doing that. Like when they introduced the realms, like what, like the first, the, I played in the first event with the realm rules, and I don't know if they have it. I don't know if any tournament since has used them, but they're pretty broken. So no one really wants, especially when you introduce Nagash into the mix. I don't think anyone really is pushing for those.
I was actually at the game store kvetching with some of the game store owner or game store manager, and we were talking about it quite a bit. That the player base hope is that they're gonna fix the point cost on the Osiark Bone Reapers, because right now they are just destroying everything in tournaments.
So yes and no, like they have a weird issue. So what the OCR Bone Reapers do, they actually don't win tournaments. They haven't won a tournament in a long time. But that being said, they gatekeep extraordinarily well, and they also are very unfun for newer or inexperienced players to play against because they're unbeatable. And what I mean by unbeatable is that you cannot play the game normally against the OCR Bone Reapers. They're so tough and they're so robust. Like trying to do the normal, like I'm going to engage in combat with your army, you'll lose. You can't kill them because they have 3+ rerollable saves everywhere, and they're doing shit like during your turn. Like all their stuff is just absolute nonsense. Now you can completely shred them on the scenario, because they're incredibly slow. They have no way to redeploy. And if you kill a couple of their characters, they get even slower and even worse. So they're definitely beatable, but they're very unstraightforward, and they are like defensively overpowered. So at first, when people started winning tournaments with them, people were like, oh, these are broken. And then people slowly started to adapt, and they're like, oh, I can just, like, it's very unfun. for a lot of people, because like the optimal strategy to play against them is to avoid contact with them as much as possible. So, like rather than trying to play, you're just, you look at the scenario and you go, can I beat this Bone Reaper army on this scenario? Yes. Okay. That's the only thing I care about. I'm just going to play the scenario. So that's an issue with them.
So once again, Steve, the only way to win is not to play.
It's true. You can definitely like, cause the thing is like the army that's busted right now that actually needs fixing is Tzeentch. Tzeentch is broken in half. Like, as far as I know, nothing has been done to curtail Tzeentch. And they're the funny thing is like the thing that almost killed Age of Sigmar 1.0 was Tzeentch. And they were S tier, just absolutely broken. It wasn't worth playing the game against them. Like, the only time you'd ever play against them is if you had to, because you're in a tournament. That's how broken they were. And I would say they were very significantly S tier. The current Tzeentch army is S plus tier. They're actually more broken than they were in 1.0, which is absurd. And they make the Bone Reapers army look like garbage, because the Tzeentch army does everything really well. And it ignores so many rules, teleports, drops units up and down. Like, it's good at range, it's good in melee, it has insane spells. Like, absolutely, totally broken fucking army. Just it broken in half. And the Tzeentch army makes the Bone Reaper army, like, actually, like, on the table, the Bone Reaper army can't touch the Tzeentch army, because the Bone Reaper army, again, like I said, it's slow. So usually you'll lose to the Bone Reaper army because you decided to throw the majority of your forces into like their giant block of infantry. And it's like, yeah, of course you lost. You put your entire army, like, you did what he wanted. Like, the Bone Reaper army is like, it's like anvil, but the anvil is a swamp. So like, as soon as you hit the anvil, the swamp spreads out and you get caught in it. So they don't actually have a hammer. Like, there's no hammer that's going to come and destroy your unit, but you're stuck in the swamp forever as soon as you touch their anvil, which is, you know, as they say, a problem.
So, but the bigger issue is, will the catapults still be as good?
Yeah, the catapults are strong. So, I mean, I don't know. The catapults rules themselves are strong. Like, I don't know how you can... They're one of those things that I feel is like... you could very easily ruin them, because if you
ruin,
because they don't change. I don't want to say they don't, because they did once for the Karadrin overlords, but they very, very, very rarely change war scrolls in the General's Handbook. The only time I can remember that is the specifically Karadrin overlords one. It's always point based, so. Obviously you can't reduce the points on the catapult. Like, you can't. It's already strong. Like, you can't reduce its points. So you can't change its rule. Like, the only way they could do that is if they changed its rules and reduced its points. But it's like, if you increase it like 40 points, like, is 40 points enough to make it still good, but you'd want to take it and spend the extra points, or is it just gonna make it useless? That's always the really hard way to balance something like the catapults, because it's like, is it, and that's the other two, is like, the question is like, is it busted? Because, or first of all, is it busted? I don't think it is. I think people thought it was busted, but the lists that had three or four of them, like, they started to fall off pretty quick. It was kind of like Nagash. It's like, it came out, it was extremely good. It was like a blitzkrieg of getting shit on by like something that was new. And then slowly you're like, oh, I don't need to care about it in this way, or so on and so forth. Or it shifted. I think that's the other thing too. Like, the metagame in Age of Sigmar changes a lot based on the armies and why armies are good or bad and what things are good or bad. So like, the Gloomspite Gits are a good example. Like, they're a very strong, Gloomspite Gits are a very strong army, but Gloomspite Gits, for example, are really hurt really badly by those catapults, because if you can snipe their characters, which the catapults are extremely good at doing, the Gloomspite Gits get worse very, very fast. So that changes how their meta placement immediately, because the Bone Reapers are popular and played a lot. And it's just like, it's like Nurgle, for example. Nurgle's been mid tier kind of forever, but Nurgle doesn't have a super awful matchup against Gloomspite Gits like regular Chaos does, because Nurgle has built-in ways to just kill their characters, where you just like, you just spin the wheel, cast spells, and you just like mortal wounds to your characters, mortal wounds to your characters, and you just kill
Make
their generals.
Make the deal, spin the wheel.
Make the deal, spin the wheel, kill the characters. So like that I would say arguably keeps Nurgle in mid tier because they have ways to deal with character heavy armies. Now, what they don't have is ways to be fast, and they don't have a lot of rend other than the one Blight King War Scroll, which is only for your Blight Kings. So like against going back to the Bone Reapers have 2+ and 3+ rerollable armor saves. Like there's not a lot of armies in the game that are drowning in rend or mortal wounds. So they exist, as I said, like a gatekeeper where it's like, oh, your army is older than this many years. You weren't done with the current design. So you're just going to throw a shit ton of dice and still die. Like if you're not throwing a shit ton of dice and those dice are capable of dealing mortal wounds, it's kind of like, yeah, you'll never get through their 30 block or 40 block of spearmen. It's fucking impossible. Or if you don't have a spell that can do it. Now, the other thing that's big is that elf army just came out.
Oh, the Lumineth?
Yeah, so I don't know their deal yet. I know that they're
flavor of the month, so they'll be good for like 3 months till the next army comes out.
Again, that's also not necessarily true. I know 40K had a really bad issue with it. Like the new book was just the best. Like they just every new book was just really good. With AOS, it's kind of random because Slaves of Darkness came out, and Slaves of Darkness was like a B tier army before its book, and then it turned into a like B plus tier army with its book. So it's kind of like, yeah, it got better, but it's certainly not, you know, winning tournaments left and right. Another perfect example actually is the Lizardmen army. What the hell are they called? The Seraphon. The Seraphon new book is very good. Seraphon, they're not top tier. Like they're just not. They had a brand new book, not top tier. The Lumineth also is two armies in one. Because it looks like Seraphon also are two armies in one, which I didn't know until I picked up the book. But and when I say two armies in one, what they are is they have, you know how in Age of Sigmar they have those like sub factions you can pick. So like with Nurgle, you can play like Maggotkin, which are like the mortals, and like they have their own specific rules, or like the Drowned Men, they have their own rules. Well, the Seraphon and the Lumineth have a step above that. Where before you even start picking your army, you pick like an overlord rule set. The Seraphons are, you can pick either the Starborn or the Coalesced, they call them. And what that does is that changes your army's universal rules top to bottom. So the Starborn version of
You're a Starborn floating through the sky. Space. You're a giant lizard, and I'd like to know why.
Yes, space. Also frogs.
And there's no model for the Slan still.
Is there not?
No, there's not a plastic Slan. There's never been a plastic Slan model.
Yeah, okay. No, I thought you meant like the current Slan is not available. That'd be funny.
You have to special order it.
Okay. So the Starborn are the classic Seraphon, like we generate a bunch of fucking points, we summon dudes, you know, it's the army that you know are used to. The Coalesced are lore-wise, they're lizard men that have established themselves on a place in the mortal realms, and they're not traveling around in space bubbles anymore. So they don't have the summoning rules. Instead, they have a set of things. So the idea is that if you had a traditional Seraphon army, you'd just keep the Starborn because you'd be like, I'm playing with Slan, I'm casting and summoning lizardmen here and there. The Coalesced is like, I want to play a fucking hard ass like good armor save lizardman, like lizardman army, not skinks, but like actual like Saurus warriors. Like, that's what I want to play. I don't want to do the Carnosaur Lord. So that's the difference in the army. So, like, it completely changes the value and effectiveness of so many choices and, like, what's good and what's bad for the list. So the Lumineth have the same thing, where the Lumineth have, I don't know what they call them, but there's the two versions of their army. One is, like, the High Elf stuff. So, like, it's the Bowman, the Spearman, the Cav, like, the stuff that looks like High Elves. Yeah. And then the other half is the
Mookows,
where you have the Mookow hat guys and you have the giant mountain Mookow dudes, which are dope. I love the giant Mookow mountain dudes. I think they're dope. The Mookow hat guys are stupid as shit. But luckily the way their hat is designed, you could just very easily clip the top where the fucking Mookow is. Like,
so I was
like, very easily just get your clippers, cut it, use some green stuff to round off their head so they just have pointy heads and they're fine.
I was actually talking when I was at the Games Workshop store with the manager, and we were talking about the Lumineth. And apparently the Lumineth, the ones that we see, are just from like the Earth temple. And there's like three more temples. There's like a fire and a wind and a water temple.
Oh, okay.
So that way that they have room to expand or create a new faction. Yeah. The Avatar. I just started watching that for the first time.
It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I was relatively impressed. I've also been watching Clone Wars on Disney Plus. I've never
you sound the level of defeat I heard in your voice. It's just like very impressive.
I've never seen it. I give, you know, people a lot of shit about it, but I figure I might as well know it. It's actually not that bad. The animation is fucking horrible, though. Everyone looks, it's like, of all of the types of animation that you could choose,
it's bad. It looks really bad.
Yeah, you choose the one where it looks the absolute worst. However, the storylines are pretty good. It does suffer from the problem with all prequels, where it's just like, you know, where everything's gonna go, right?
So yeah, I always hate that too. It's like oh yeah, is Yoda gonna be okay?
That's what I always say. It's like, oh man, I'm watching Revenge of the Sith. I hope Yoda ends up okay, or I hope Obi-Wan survives this.
Yeah, hopefully like, Obi-Wan survives this dangerous situation.
Yeah, and you're watching it, and you see Palpatine doing all this shit, and you're just like, it takes away so much when you know that he's already the bad guy and he's doing all of this other shit.
Right.
And you're like, you just realize that it's like, at least in the movies, Obi-Wan and Anakin were dumb for like three movies. It was just three movies.
Yeah.
Like when you're watching a TV show, you realize that over the course of seven seasons that these guys still haven't figured it out.
Yes.
That's when it becomes even more unbelievable at my point. But
that's the problem with all prequels, though. It's just like, if you have a prequel that has the characters from your, you know, contemporary story in it, it completely makes whatever they're going to go through irrelevant because they've already passed it.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain stuff to it. I mean, like, it does put some of the actual prequel story and makes it better because you're like, oh, well, this helps develop this. However, that doesn't make the prequels any better because they're still shitty movies. Mm-hmm. It just is like the overall story. You're like, okay, I understand this a little bit more, but it's no excuses to like the prequels. That's what I'm saying.
The prequels are fucking terrible.
I think that's what it comes down to, is that the prequels are awful fucking movies. And this is coming from a guy who just put together a prequel Star Wars Legion Army. So
yeah, the prequels are awful. Just fucking terrible films. I mean, that is not to downplay that the original trilogy is, you know, some sort of like epic piece of filmmaking, because, you know, they're just pulp movies, but
it's better filmmaking.
Yeah. I guess it's a good example. They're effective pulp fantasy versus dross.
Like dross,
just absolute dross. Like that's what it is. That's the easiest way I can make the consumption. Because, like, you know, anyone who says, like, you know, back to the whole, like, you know, Funko, the Funko Pop soy facing of the world. If you're not a Funko Pop soy facer, you know, you would never claim that, like, the Star Wars films are high art. But there's a huge difference between, you know, acceptable, I wouldn't say they're exploitation because they're closer to serials. So I'd say pulp, you know, acceptable and well done pulp and, you know, the fucking prequels. Prequels are fucking garbage. They're not even entertaining. Like, so much of those movies are just like, nothing is happening. Like, yes, the movie I want to see about the lightsaber guys, the first 50 minutes are fucking talking about a trade dispute.
No, it actually starts up pretty quick. It starts off with a trade dispute, but it's they get to the lightsaber quick. The problem is,
but they don't maintain. There's like a quick thing where you're like, oh, these are lightsabers. And then it's like, and now there's nothing happening for a solid like 50 minutes.
Well, the problem with the prequels is that the action is boring. Like, you're like, there's no sense of urgency or sense of dread or sense of like purpose to the sword fighting, to like their action. It's just boring. You're like, oh, they're going to get out of this. Like,
it's true.
So you're a filmmaker, and you think, you look at like theory of film right there. you have Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan landing on the Trade Federation with the racist aliens, right?
Yes.
And so immediately what happens is the racist aliens decide to attack the Jedi. Why?
Right. Right. Like, with crappy robots.
Yeah, with crappy robots, okay? So they're trying to kill the Jedi with the crappy robots. And that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's established right off the bat. So why would you do that? Because there's no sense, like you know they're going to escape that situation. You've already established that.
Yes.
So there's no reason to have that action except just to have action. Right? Like, look at the opening of A New Hope. The opening of A New Hope, you basically have the giant Star Destroyer chasing the blockade runner.
Yeah, you establish everything in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, I mean, not only that, but you establish it in the first shot that you have this group that's running away from this entity that's going to overpower them. This massive evil, and it's just...
Yeah, you see a spaceship that you think is big, because you see behind it, and then you see the spaceship that's chasing it, and you're like, oh shit, that spaceship's big.
Yeah, exactly. So you got that right off the bat. And then, so they dock, and then you have all of these rebels running down the hallway preparing, and you know, you could see it in their eyes and in the shots that they're prepared to die. They know they're not going to survive this because it's bigger than them. They have to at least buy the princess some time to get the information off the ship. Right?
Right.
And you know that the action right back has a purpose. And the purpose is to tell you that these rebels are doomed. That's the purpose of that action right there. They are not getting out of this. And you establish Darth Vader as this fucking force of nature that's coming through there. And the people are terrified of him. And there, within the first, you know, fucking 3 minutes of that movie, it's all established right there for you.
Right.
Like, what's going on there? And then what do you have in the first 3 minutes of fucking Phantom Menace? Roger, roger.
Roger, roger. Yeah, you have silliness. Like, immediately cartoon. It's an immediate cartoon.
Yeah, it's an immediate cartoon. They're not establishing anything. They're not establishing... The only thing that they're establishing are that the Jedi could basically get out of anything at that point. And it's like, but we already knew that. So we don't need to establish that. So... Well, I guess maybe it's like to show that, oh, this is like the Jedi's have all these fun powers. Like, they can move really fast and hold their breath. It's like, okay, who gives a shit?
You know, right? you know how you do a good prequel? The Mandalorian.
Yes. Well, The Mandalorian is not technically a prequel, but yes.
I mean, it's happening before the events of the current franchise. So it makes it a prequel.
I guess it happens before the sequels, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's a prequel. If you're doing something that covers established lore, but prior to what your current lore is, it is in fact a prequel.
Like, I'll give you that. Yeah. No, The Mandalorian does a great job because it doesn't really have anything to do with anything except now Dave Filoni is all like, I'm gonna put all of my shit inside The Mandalorian.
Oh, I'm sure the second season of The Mandalorian will be fucking awful. But we had that first season, which was very good. But I mean, you know that the Mandalorian is not actually going to be in trouble at any point because, you know, he's the titular character. So obviously you're not going to, no one is going to be like, oh my goodness, is the Mandalorian actually going to escape this troublesome situation? Yes, obviously. His name's the fucking Mandalorian. Like, the show is named The Mandalorian. He's going to escape. But there is still interesting bits of the story because, you know, but the other important note is he might not escape the whole series. Like, he might die in the last episode or be crippled or be revealed to be some other character. Like, that's the thing that makes it interesting because you don't know who he is. Because when you have fucking Obi-Wan and it's just like, yeah, you know, I'm Obi-Wan. Clearly, you know who I am already. So anything I do is irrelevant because you know where I'm going to end up on fucking Tatooine. Like, cool. And then, of course, my favorite part about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn is like, you know, in the fucking original movies, Obi-Wan's like, yeah, I got trained by Yoda and I met your dad when he was an ace fighter pilot. And then, of course, you know, we wave that away in the prequels by going, well, the power of myth.
Well, the power of myth. No, yeah. Obi-Wan's a fucking liar. That's what it comes down to.
No, it's George Lucas is a terrible fucking writer. That's what it comes down to. Like, I love that there are still people who actually believe that he's like, I have had all these stories written. I'm like, he was fucking writing Phantom Menace like the day before they started filming. He was fucking crib noting dialogue right then and there, which is why there's so many fucking contradictions. Because if you wrote a complete story, you would never fall into those kind of contradictions in your story. If you wrote a complete one, it just like you would fall into other contradictions, but not ones that are like that's the Star Trek level contradictions. Like anytime Star Trek contradicts itself, it's always something that's like, I would say nitpicky almost. Where it's like, hey, wait a minute. In this one episode, they said that this thing was like this. But now in this episode, they're saying that it's like this. That's not right. That's the level of Star Trek being a mistake. Yeah. But like
the only two bad ones in Star Trek are Threshold, which is always
it is the benchmark for bad Star Trek episodes.
Yes, it's a benchmark for bad Star Trek episodes. And also, I always think about I can't remember the name of the episode, but it's the one where they find out that all of the space warping is causing tears, and it's like. They no longer can go like warp 9 unless like ordered by Starfleet.
Oh yeah, yeah, and they just like kind of like never really talk about that again.
Yeah, they never really. They mention it like on occasion, like we've gotten orders from Starfleet to use warp 7 and blah blah blah. But it's they kind of were like, yeah, maybe not. I mean, it's a great plot point. I think
it was a good plot point where warp was destroying the fabric of reality.
Yeah, yes. and it goes right down to kind of the environmentalism. Aspect of Star Trek, which they never really gotten to, but yeah, that's what it needs to go down to.
Right, but and to throw this is like the perfect example. None of that is primary character backgrounds. So if we were to make this an equivalent, you would have to put Kirk in an episode of The Next Generation or in the movie Generations, and just have him just rewrite his background story. Be like, I was the captain of the Sulaco. Like, wait a minute, he was the captain of the Enterprise. No. The Sulaco.
What's the Sulaco from? Oh, from
Alien. Yeah, yeah. Sulaco's from Alien. That's our aliens, not Alien. That's the dropship. Our aliens. But yeah, so like,
I was like, that's not from Star Trek.
Yeah, it's not. It's from fucking Aliens. that's exactly it. Like, you know, the Obi-Wan's background being completely rewritten, like at a whim, is just clearly like he didn't write these stories anywhere near to the same time. He just cobbled them together and was just like, ah, Star Wars.
But it's what I have to say though is that, you know, I give Dave Filoni shit for jerking himself off quite a bit. I mean, but he writes a damn good story. I'll tell you that. He the stuff that he has added has made stuff fairly interesting. I mean, it still doesn't, you know, solve all of my major problems with the prequels storyline, but it does some nice stuff. Like, I'm watching one right now, and I'm sorry guys, for those who are listening and I'm talking about this and you're like, I know about this because I watched it 10 years ago when it came out. I didn't, because I was, you know, I was very much angry at Star Wars and I thought the animation was shit. But considering the fact that I've been sitting at home for the last 6 months doing, you know, very little, there's not much left for me to watch. So there's a couple seasons,
and the animation is shit.
Yeah, there's a couple episode arc in the second season where it's Obi-Wan, I guess, had this an affair when he was a younger Jedi with this one diplomat, so it kind of mirrors the whole Anakin Padme thing. And
Padme!
Yeah. And Obi-Wan, being the good Jedi Knight, you know, broke it off or whatever, or how, I don't know how it officially ended for them. I haven't really finished it up yet. But I'm like, this is good because it parallels the actual storyline from Anakin. And so Obi-Wan can come from a point of,
understanding.
Yeah, point of understanding, and it helps the situation. However, because George Lucas fucked it up so bad that none of that's played out in the third movie, so you don't actually, you know, it doesn't mean anything in the long run.
They can just talk to Jester Dexter. He'll tell them all the answers.
Obi, my friend.
I fucking love Dexter Jester, but man, what a fucking ridiculous character.
He runs a space diner, Steve.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I like his design where he's just like a fucking four-armed greasy spoon line cook, owns a space diner. But like, holy shit, like having Deus Ex Machina be like some dude who should absolutely not know any of the things that he knows. That's pretty bad. I do like him though. I like the way he looks.
I'm a Targaryen.
Yeah, well, I'm a sucker for like the greasy line cook design. I always like those guys.
You know, the big fat guy.
Yeah, you know, just the greasy line cook. Just that guy. Like he's in stuff. Greasy line cook.
He's in stuff. I think we should actually finish up because I think we're hitting our 1 hour point at this time. But the General's Handbook is also gonna. I think the big thing that they're talking about for it is that they are they're doing hero building, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that.
So you're gonna get like the ability to kind of customize your own main character for whatever have you. I don't know how that's going to play out for anything other than like your just home game.
It'll be banned. I don't think there's any way that's going to be let fly. There's just that's just opening up like the game already has some balance issues, and like adding what would be likely a catastrophic level of balance issues is not something that the game needs.
Catastrophic.
Or the other option, this one's always a possibility. It'll be bad, so no one will care. They'll be like, "Yeah, you can use it," and then you're just like, "Look at this idiot using his custom character."
I do want to say though, if you go to the Warhammer community page that talk about building your own character, there is a guy who did a custom. It says Thomas Elliott is his name. Did a vampire lord, and what he did was he took the Necrarch, you know, the dragon, the undead dragon, the Terrorgeist. He took that head and the wings and put them on Archeon's dragon, and it's fucking amazing looking. Like, I'm looking at that, I'm like, this is...
The undead dragon, right?
Yeah, the undead dragon.
I actually got mixed up because I saw it online, and I was like, that model's fucking awesome. Since when did they release a new vampire model? And then I looked and I noticed the tails, and I was like, fuck!
Yeah, you can tell by the pose that's Archeon's dragon.
Yeah, but it's because I saw the thumbnail. So on the thumbnail, I was just like, "This is fucking sweet." And then like, whoop.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's what it is. So yeah, that's that. Do we have any other gaming stuff that I'm missing or anything like that?
I mean, saying other gaming stuff implies we covered any gaming stuff. Well, I guess we covered 40K.
We covered a lot. We covered 40K and fantasy and Age of Sigmar.
We did talk about some game things.
Well, yeah, I was going to say. Oh, you know what else happened? So we talked about Arch on this podcast before, the really shitty alt-right guy.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently World of Warships, the mobile game,
mm-hmm.
they did something with Warhammer, with Games Workshop. Right?
Oh, yeah, I saw. They had two big ships. That one looks like a Chaos. It kind of looks like Battlefleet Gothic aesthetics glued onto real world old warships.
Yeah, I mean it's World of Tanks but with boats, essentially, is what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna see if I could pull up the actual information on it, but apparently the people who made World of Warships were told specifically by Games Workshop, do not do anything with this Arch character. Don't give him any sponsorship or anything.
Is he like a big World of Warships guy or something?
I just think that because he has a YouTube channel that has a lot of subscribers, they probably were like, oh, he might be a person that we might be able to like.
Oh, I see.
Like, pay to.
They would not look and just target him as an influencer with level of subscribers. I getcha.
Yeah. So they released this, and it says, due to an error on our side, a rather controversial figure in Warhammer community, Arch Warhammer, was involved in our marketing activities for World of Warships and World of Warships Legends. While working on our Warhammer collaboration, we were specifically warned by Games Workshop not to work with this influencer, and we agreed to it. Thus, we ended our sponsoring the person we don't want to be affiliated with and failed to fulfill an important and rightful request of our partner. So it looks like Games Workshop told them, don't fucking do this. They either ignored it or forgot about it or didn't tell like the people who were supposed to, you know, help people.
The marketing team.
Yeah. And so they were like, they immediately pulled sponsorship and put this up saying like, oh yeah, we're sorry. So,
That's funny.
Yeah. So, and then we have sent a request to take down the promotional video.
That's awesome.
So that's the one thing I wanted to say that's a funny positive is this guy is specifically like, you know, Games Workshop is British, so they're much more polite than we are. So it just goes to show you that behind the scenes, Games Workshop is telling people, don't fucking deal with this guy.
I mean, they're paying attention. They don't want their game to be associated with right-wing nationalism. I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, yeah. Well, we don't want our game about fascism to be associated with fascism.
That's what I'm saying. That one of the reasons that it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the reasons that they've moved away from maintaining the parody that they came up with in Margaret Thatcher era Britain is because it's Tuesday in it. The line between satire is just gone. Like, it's just gone. Like, satire is dead, and satire is dead because it just is. I don't know how to.
Print is dead.
It's not that print is dead. Like, obviously print is very much fucking alive, but Starship Troopers. I saw a fucking article that was written with their full chest belief. It was like, I think it was on The Verge maybe. Verve. It's some pop culture site. And it was like things from Starship Troopers that did not age well. and I shit you not, they were just like, oh, okay, Screen Rant. That was it. It was Screen Rant. And they're like, completely unironically, like, the violent nationalism, the glorification of war, the idealized government. and it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you fucking kidding me? And it's like, nope. They are not kidding you. They're with their whole chest. They're like, they just like yelling out as much as possible that like they even say it's satirical. Like, the first line is from director of such great satirical science fiction films as RoboCop and Total Recall. Starship Troopers is about Earth's fighting elite protecting the planet. So like, why would you not understand? Because they don't say Starship Troopers. They say from the director of such great satirical science fiction films as RoboCop and Total Recall, which are both fantastic social commentary satirical films.
I don't know if Total Recall is a commentary on
Total Recall is a Total Recall is a commentary on corporatism.
I guess I could see that. I mean, I wouldn't go that far. I mean,
give those people air.
But I think, well, whatever. But that's aside the point. We could argue this point later.
Yeah, I would say Total Recall is a, what is it? I don't know. There's probably some sort of tier or like Total Recall is soft satire. Starship Troopers and RoboCop are hard satire.
Yes, that's very true. I will give you that both of those movies are very hard satires.
Yeah, so I think that's the best way to think. Because, like, you know, you could watch Total Recall and never pick up on the subtext of any of the satire because it's very soft. It's not in your face. But, like, RoboCop is, like, super in your face, and so is Starship Troopers. So that's what I'm saying. And that's why I was saying satire is dead. So you can't have you just can't do it anymore, really, unless you're, like, even if you think it's blatantly obvious, like, you have to put, like, fucking blaring goddamn foghorns that say satire.
No, right. And,
yeah.
Sorry, that's foghorn.
It's the old joke about people thinking the onion was real, but it's just reality now. Like, everyone
ate the onion.
And it's just like, goddamn. So you can't have a game where you're like, we're making fun of fascism, because you just have the actual new, like, 19-year-old fascists who are like, this game is about fascism and I like fascism. So you can't have that satire anymore, because you get people who don't get the satire and think that you're just like giving them a wink and a nod, like, yep, we're on your side, white nationalist guy.
No, that's why I absolutely love it, because I like the Games Workshop as being very very, very, very British in their response to it, where it's like, we're not gonna outright say that we don't like this guy. We're gonna say that we welcome all people, and we are going to slyly tell all of our corporate partners, don't deal with this fucker.
Yes.
That's probably the most British way of approaching any of these subjects. And speaking of, the last thing we'll talk about really quick, did you see that someone from Southampton got a little famous? Southampton? I don't know. But that's where our boys over in,
oh, yes.
Where boys are from.
Hamish. Good old Hamish.
Did you see what they found?
I did not. No. I'm ready.
A man from Southampton took a picture of the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm ready. Hit me.
I'm ready. let me see. I have to pull it up. But It's unknown if it's actually the Loch Ness Monster or a giant catfish. The picture was taken June 23rd, and it's a gigantic fish is basically what it looks like. Like, you can look at the picture and you're like, oh, this is a huge fucking fish, right? When you look at the giant fish, it's about 8 feet long is what they kind of established the size of the fish.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it's huge. It looked, yeah. Maybe it's a grouper.
It's a what?
It could be a grouper.
It could be a grouper.
Groupers are terrifyingly big. So
I'm thinking that it might be a catfish. As a guy from the Midwest who's seen massive size catfish, I will tell you that that's probably a catfish.
Yeah, I mean, that's also possible. I don't know what aquatic life is native to the UK, but I know groupers are absolutely monstrously huge, and catfish can also get monstrously huge, like terrifyingly big. And that's the thing, like, you don't need it to be a cryptozoologist thing to be really interesting and cool, because like, yeah, the fact that that thing exists, like, whatever that is awesome. Like, it's huge and it's something that's real, so it's cool.
They say it could also be a seal.
See that. It's kind of got like a spotted pattern on it. Yeah. I mean, but that would be a big fucking seal.
I'm going to hold out hope that it is the Loch Ness Monster, whatever it is. I know it's probably not. I know
you love your cryptids.
I do love cryptids. I think cryptozoology is a incredibly fun, non-controversial, kind of science.
By that, I mean,
it's very hard to take it's not impossible, but it's hard to take a hard right response on cryptozoology, except for the people who are like, the fucking Nazis created Bigfoot.
I actually think that someone asked me if there was any conspiracy theory that didn't eventually like lead down the path to like crazy like right wing super nationalist stuff, and I think cryptozoology might be it.
I will respectfully disagree, because I have heard some stuff.
Have you? Okay, fair enough. But, so then there's just no such thing as like getting into conspiracy theories and escaping the QAnon.
But what I'm going to say
the path to QAnon.
What I'm going to say is that it's like cryptozoology, you got to kind of go down a really deep wormhole to find some.
That's the argument of how the algorithm radicalizes people, where it's just like you slowly start seeing videos that get more and more extreme because it just recommends them to you because of where you live.
Yeah. Well, what I always talk about is like cryptozoology, you have to, like, there's the level of like real hard science cryptozoology where it's like, we're going to study like footprints and hair, and we're going to collect these stories, and we're going to try and put it together into a package of something that really could exist. And then you have the people that are like, the chupacabra's a fucking alien who's fucking, they're being held. And, you know, all this shit and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, you gotta, like, that's the woo-woo stuff like that. Like, Bigfoot's a trans-dimensional traveler, you know? he's fucking Mr. Whatever from Star Trek. Mr. Holm is what that is.
Yeah, yeah. He's not an ancient creature. He's a future creature.
Yeah, something like that. But, like, it's not like where it's like, oh, man, did you see, what was a TV show that was canceled that everybody loves? I don't know.
Like, it's a lot of shows.
Canceled Firefly? Because of the goddamn Jews. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. It just took 2 seconds. It took 2 seconds for you to get there. That's what happened.
Yeah, no, that I don't talk about. Not to get too namey, because I don't want to do that, because it's not, you know, I'm not going to put anyone on blast, but there's a customer of one of my coworkers who is like, I don't understand. I if you ask me to put him in a political like anything, I would fail. It's impossible. because like, I've seen him, like, he's gone off on like the most anti-Semitic rants I think I've ever seen, so badly that he got banned from carrying events for Pokemon and Wizards. Like,
ooh.
He cannot run events for any of the current card games that exist because of his anti-Semitic rants. Okay. And like, they're that bad.
Still
they're
does ins- Yu-Gi-Oh though, so
they're insane. Well, Yu-Gi-Oh doesn't care. Yu-Gi-Oh doesn't care if you have a gun violation. But like, just absolutely like reading it, I was just like, holy shit, like actually like, whoa. so that's the thing. So, but also simultaneously, I'll see him like, I saw him on the same, like, so there was a big long, like someone linked the thread or whatever. Like, and the thread was just his Facebook posts, and like sandwiched in between the like straight up like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking Nazi, are like pro, like, I want people to have healthcare for free. I'm like, how does this, like, where does this guy fall? Like, it's impossible. Like, I can't quantify him. He's everywhere. Like, all of it, like, his positions were like everywhere. He's like, break up the banks, you know, socialize medicine, break up Amazon, you know, give people healthcare. I'm pro civil rights. I don't like the police. And then like a bunch of really crazy right wing shit. And I'm just like, well, what is this guy? and I believe I figured it out in the end. I believe the actual answer, he's just old.
Yep.
I think that's what it is. It's like, I think I eventually settled on, he's just old. He's just old.
He's just old. So that's a congratulations to Southampton for having one of their own take a great picture of something that may quite be the Loch Ness Monster.
I hope that it's revealed to be a giant ass grouper. And yeah, because groupers are cool.
I'm hoping it's a mermaid.
A mermaid. Well, now we got to do, what kind of mermaid? Are we talking like a Selkie mermaid or like the classic?
Well, it's Scotland, so I'm assuming it would be probably a Selkie.
Okay. Yeah. So it has to be a Selkie. Yeah. So here's a question.
I think the Selkie's technically Irish, but you know, a half dozen of one.
I personally feel that the lighthouse settled the argument on how mermaids work.
Yeah.
But I want to know if you feel that mermaids are still the Futurama style, they lay eggs and leave the room. How do you feel?
Why you just spill your beans?
You fancied me lobster, didn't you?
You fancied me lobster. You fancied me lobster.
You fancied me lobster. Like I said, that movie is like a movie that I really liked a lot of, but overall I did not like that movie. I really wish I liked it more, but I wanted to like that movie so much more, but it just
sticks with me. It sticks with me quite a bit.
So much of it missed, but I think, and the reason I think it sticks with you, and I think the reason it sticks with me, same thing, is the fucking acting was perfect. It was so like, that was like
Defoe.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that was a tour de foe. of Willem Dafoe's acting skill.
He's so much so that I no longer call him Willem Dafoe. I call him Willem DeFriend.
Willem DeFriend. Yeah, yes, Willem Dafoe implies the existence that there's a Willem
DeFriend.
there's a great shot of him. I have no idea where it's from, but he's in the fucking he's doing the Slav squat in the Steve Zissou outfit. It's so good.
That would probably be from Life Aquatic. He was in that movie.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. That's why. That makes sense. I completely forgot he was in that fucking movie. Because it's the picture is him doing the Slav squat, and it's circulating with him in the fucking the lighthouse, because it says, you know, 2019 me, 2020 me. And yeah, it's good. No, I didn't even think about that. I'm going to post that right now on Game Classy. With no context. I'm just going to post
no context. Pages. So just for the listeners.
Yeah.
Oh boy. All right, guys. So, go to the Game Classy Facebook page is the best way to get in contact with us. You could like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. You could also like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes, which is the best way you can get in contact with us. Steve's also on the Twitter. Steve's at, command_throw, correct?
Yes.
And I am on the Instagram as Game Classy Joe, if you want to see my painted stuff. I've been on quite a tear recently with some, if you want to see some Star Wars figures, some bootleg Star Wars figures I printed, that's the place to see them for right now. With the Darth Maul dual dildo lightsaber. Dildo saber, I guess. It would be a lightsaber. It would only be a lightsaber if the dildos were made of light. Like if they were energy dildos.
Energy dildos?
Oh, yes.
I mean, well then it wouldn't be a saber. It'd be a light dildo.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Light dildo. So since these are dildos used with the saber, I guess it would be a dildo saber, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If it's okay.
A, if it's a,
dildo.
If it's simultaneously, you know what? One blade is a dildo and one blade is a lightsaber. You better guess right.
Well, if you were to actually do it, the handle that you hold, you know, the actual, you know, hilt would be a dildo, and you press a button and then the lightsaber would come out of the dildo.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, yeah. Okay. So anyway, Steve, until next cast.
We stan an icon, Willem Dafoe.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Game classy.